nikayanga na banjala tu kuparwa tinabatwa mushe koma lelo lipazulika nikale tinakalapo kondwela lelo heka tutikumbukila kweta chokela amai kuvutika mutima koma zoti tazisoa nimaona misozi masomwake ni mavuto abale ni mavuto Kumwanako kuipirendi kuchitoko na mumufolo hamama inei njiziwanda zota nizi taeza talema na yuma pempelo atika pena siku lina azati kumbukila oye chifu kwa lelo bantu bonse basoweza ulemu atate imwe Kale osangalala Tuva ingatoki Talema na pepo Kapena mbale wanga Azazi wakuti akula Azazi otawa mavuto Alimumanja mwake Kapena zaziwa Kuti afuniko limba Chifukwa ni mwamuna Afuniko vuti kila banja Kuti ni bambo wa nyumba Elo asatae wana Siunga ziwe Aza kutunga kutogoro Popo
Good morning and welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio. It is Saturday, July the 7th, I believe, 2018. We do appreciate you taking the time to join us, to listen, to tune in, to log in from whichever part of the world you listen to from us. It's 8:03 a.m. in Central Standard Time in Dallas, Texas. It's 13:03 GMT. 15:03 Zambia, Central Africa, and 9:03 p.m. Western Australia and the rest of the world. We do appreciate you joining us today. We have a great and interesting short discussion for you. Some of you have seen a survey which is going around and requesting Zambians living in the diaspora to sign. And we'll be talking to the initiators of that a survey and just about some of the other things that that organization does. We are waiting to connect to Lusaka. And before we do that, we'll say good morning to our colleagues. Good morning, Ms. Sombo.
Hello, good morning.
How are you? How's, is it Virginia?
Yes, Richmond, Virginia. I'm good, and Richmond is okay.
All right, that's good. Dr. Monsanja, how are you?
Yeah, good morning. How is everybody on the show today?
We're doing fine. How are things over there? We had 100 degrees here, then it rained, and then everything is, you know, this is Texas. Anything can happen in 24 hours.
Yeah. No, here we are just still remembering the show that we had last weekend with B1.
Oh,
you
know, okay. Excellent.
A very great event. You know, we need things like that to keep us up in America.
Okay. I know that you wanted to listen to that Kalindula music you are missing in Zambia.
That's right.
Okay, let's see if our guest is with us. Uncle Daniel, let's say good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Nkama. Our guest is on the other line.
On the other line, okay. This morning and afternoon, for those in Africa and evening in other parts of the world, like we said, we are joined by Tarisai Jangara, who is a program specialist, communication, at Zambian Governance Foundation, and we're going to be discussing the work of ZGF and the survey that they have issued or released or they are sharing online for the Zambians to participate in and to get involved. Tarisai, good afternoon.
Good afternoon and good morning to you.
How are you doing? Thank you for joining us and for giving us the time to have a chat with you.
Thank you very much. I'm doing well. It's extremely cold this side, and we are just trying to keep warm.
That's the best thing to do. Am I pronouncing the name correctly, Tarisai?
Yes, Tarisai Jangara.
Jangara. Okay, excellent. Before, the first thing I want us to do is Program Specialist Communication, what does that entail? Tell us what you do at Zambian Governance Foundation.
My job is very simple. It's just what I'm doing right now, talking mostly.
Mm-hmm.
So my work as a communication specialist at the Zambian Governance Foundation focuses mostly on providing communication support within the organization, establishing and maintaining media relations, and also working on all the branding materials for our organization. I also play a pivotal role in supporting our partners, those are our grant partners that we have had in the past and those we have currently. So I provide training and I just make sure that we have strong communication support.
Okay, excellent. Tell us about Zambian Governance Foundation. When did it get into the country? What do you guys do?
So ZGF was established in 2009 as a civil society support system. So basically, to date, since inception, ZGF has supported 106 civil society organizations. So the support that we have rendered to civil society organizations is mainly through grants and capacity development support. Because we realize that just giving out money to civil society organizations without that capacity development support that can enable them to implement their projects and their work effectively, it doesn't work. So our work... Can you still hear me?
Hello, yes, we can.
Okay, so the projects that we have done with our partners is mainly focused on making government more accountable to the needs of the poor and the vulnerable in different sections of the society. We have seen the transformation of communities across all the 10 provinces of Zambia because we don't just work in a specific province, but work in all the provinces. But while we have celebrated successes of these initiatives, the different initiatives that we have had in the past and current, it has always been disheartening to see each and every project coming to an end without any sort of sustainability.
It's interesting what you have explained. Two things I want you to address here. Number one, so basically, ZGF, one of the major things or one of the primary objectives it was established, formed, and it exists is to give support to civil society. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Something interesting, Tarisa, is when somebody goes to the website, those who are listening, the website is simply zgf.org.zm, of course, www.zgf.org.zm, if you want to follow what we're talking about. I find an interesting contrast here, philanthropy work and governance. If somebody says, I don't know whether you've heard this, somebody respond to you this way. Philanthropy and governance, they sound a little bit contradictory. I don't know what your response to that is.
So, you know, organization was established, mostly it was focused on promoting governance. And how we're doing that, we're doing that by supporting other small and big civil society organizations with capacity development in order for them to influence policy engagement. But with years, we started realizing that this was not really sustainable in the sense that there's a project that we focus on or we have a funding which is just for 3 years or 2 years. When it comes to an end, that work stops. So the ending of each funding cycle has seen some organizations are shutting down due to limited funds to sustain their organization. But communities have also not been spared as they have been at the receiving end without any form of sustainability to ensure that they carry on with the work that would have been initiated by civil society organizations. So the work, our work around local philanthropy, but how it comes. So we started thinking like, okay, we still want to carry on with the work that we are doing, but how do we make sure that we do it in a sustainable way whereby organizations themselves, they can carry on with their work and communities can still benefit. So we did a research which we called Beyond Giving, just to look at the resources that are in existence locally. So the survey that we carried out, we realized that as Zambians, we are givers. We give to our families, we give to our churches. A lot of giving is already going on in the country, but there's much reliance on donor funds. But the truth is donor funds are dwindling and they're not going to be there forever. So with local philanthropy, the concept of local philanthropy, we are trying to tap into the local resources to ensure that if our communities have issues that they want to be addressed, they shouldn't just wait for government, they shouldn't just wait for external assistance. They can also do something as a community. So already we have done a community asset mapping in this community called Namanongo in Rufunta. And I can tell you that the people of that community, they were so shocked because when we talk about assistance, we are not just talking about financial assistance. Even the schools, even the resources, even the mountains that are in a specific community, just putting them down and having them in inventory. So that's what we did with one community. And when we shared the results, they were super amazed that they even had nurses, they even had people who could do child care in the communities. They had carpenters and stuff. But when development is taking place, it's done in a vacuum where even the community which has carpenters, which has builders, they have external people which will come and do that sort of work for them. But we are thinking with local philanthropy, we can promote the use of local resources and local skills. So that's what we are sort of calling local is lacquer and trying to move from dependence to ascendance as an institution.
Excellent. That's excellent. Tarisai, local philanthropy. It's interesting that you use that terminology because I think Africa in general has been known to sort of get from the Western world or Western countries that donate and everything. Good stuff on philanthropy. Let's go to governance. This organization, ZGF, has been in existence from, I think you've been under, I can't just give you the exact figure. Okay, let me just say, since MMD was in power and then you are up to this stage, I think next year this will be 10 years, I believe. Am I right? 10 years since you've been in Zambia, right? Exactly. So how has this thing of government accountability, how have you approached it over the 9 years? How has it worked? The reason I mentioned that you've been under, you've been in the country since MMT, because there's been this notion in Zambia, I don't know about other African countries, to say civil society organizations are basically stooges of Western countries or Western donor countries. Could you address, I know it's a mouthful, things are thrown at you, could you just address what I've read?
Oh, okay. I think I will respond to the aspect of what we have done in terms of making government accountable. So, like I mentioned earlier on, that we have supported 106 civil society organizations. So what I mean with that sort of support is that most organizations, they work in a way whereby they are much more focused in issues to do with service delivery. But when it comes to that level of policy engagement and making sure that their work is intertwined with government policies, there have been gaps, which is what we have seen in the past and what we have been trying to address. I can give you a simple issue, like the issue around education. I think the policy stipulates that from grade 1 to grade 7 for primary education is supposed to be free. But when you go to communities like Muchinga and other provinces that we have been working in, you find that children are still being, they're still being chased away from school for that component of PTA, parents to teacher position, that they are supposed to be. So what we do with the policy engagement approach, we make sure that the civil society organizations that are working in those areas, they don't take it upon themselves to say, 1, 2, 3, 4 children are the ones we are going to pay for. They need to do something which is beneficial to the whole community. So with using the policy engagement approach, they now have to approach the district officers, the education officers at different angles, using lobbying for the free education policy, for the actual implementation of it, to make sure that it's functional and it's beneficial for the different students in primary school. So with this approach, we have seen that the chasing away of children in school, there has been a reduction in that. As also the schools are beginning to pay attention to that, and parents have been conscientized and they are aware of this policy. Because at times, as government is not made accountable in a simple manner, that when children are chased away from school, parents can just believe that, okay, this is the right thing to do. We don't have money. We are supposed to look for that money and pay. But there are specific procedures that are supposed to be taken in regards to that specific policy. So we've been trying to interrogate each and every policy with our partners, because as AGF, we don't implement, but our partners, they implement with our support.
Excellent. When you give this support that you've given to the 106 civil society organizations, it's very obvious to anybody that the whole of the continent of Africa, Zambia in particular, the greatest vulnerable people are in rural areas. Is there a demand that the work is concentrated in rural areas, or you just release the funds and you let the organization decide what to do?
So our work is non-thematic. We don't focus on specific thematic areas because we are not rigid, and we don't want that sort of restriction to say this is what we are focusing on. But we are focused in areas like Muchinga because of the nature of that province. I won't explain much about the nature of that province, but we are focused in provinces like that.
What is that nature of that province? Tell us about it. What is that nature of that province?
In terms of development, just looking at Muchinga, it's difficult to compare it with other provinces. For them, I can say it's a little bit backward. So that's why we had to focus on that, to make sure that is also up to date and up to pace with other provinces.
Okay. Others have said the Northwestern is the one which is the most backward. I don't know what your response is that and what you have seen in your work in Northwestern province.
I think that basically depends on the measurements that people will be using for them to give such a description. But I think this is something which is just subjective to someone's opinion and the different trends that they'll be seeing in a particular community.
Okay. I don't know if you don't mind us doing this. Let's do a parallel comparison. Northwestern Muchinga. I know I'm putting you on the spot here because what are the parallels or similarities between the two provinces that makes them the most backward, so to say?
The simple thing in terms of infrastructure, if you look at ICT technologies, even the roads, accommodation, simple infrastructure, the way I have related to people in Chinga, like from a communications perspective, because I spent some time there documenting some stories of change. For me, that has been the major thing that I've seen that has been lacking, and even in terms of the way I challenge them.
Oh, okay. Excellent. That, it's interesting to learn that because the notion most of us have had is that Northwestern Province is the least developed, if we can use that terminology, in Zambia. Two more things, Tarisai, before we go to the survey that is circulating. I noticed on your website that ZGF has done some submissions to parliamentary committees. Can you talk to us about that?
So I think in the past we have made a number of submissions in terms of supporting the government and also pushing for certain policies to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that we have focused on that I remember clearly is the one on land rights. Yeah, that
yes.
was the recent, not the recent submission that we made, I think, sometime in April. And in that regard, I think it's emanated from the work that we have done with supporting land alliances, what we call Zambia Land Alliances organizations, which are in Zambia, which include Manza, DAL, Chipata Land Alliance also. So there have been gaps when you look at the issues around land. That's why we have been pushing for what we call access to justice. Under some of the programs and projects that we have, to ensure that even widows, even people with disabilities, they also have access to land. But it's a whole spectrum when it comes to the issues regarding land. But those are the ones that I can clearly remember that we have done, and the ones that we have supported our partners on.
Okay.
But
so,
also that's just a way of us. Ensuring that all the documentation that we do with communities or with our partners is just not information that sits in our offices, but to ensure that we share that with government on that policy.
How has been government's response to this type of engagement that you have done, and how would you describe your relationship with the current government?
I think our submissions that we have made, most of them, they've been adopted and they've been included in different policies, and this is the feedback that we've always gotten from the parliament. And also to highlight that the work that we are doing is quite useful. We have had several invitations by different parliamentary portfolios to come and present and to also share our thoughts. But that's all I can say. Our relationship with government is fine. In the fact that we always ensure that our work is that our policy influence angle, and we can only achieve that if we are working with government at different levels, which starts at district level, provincial level, then at national level. And we encourage our partners to do the same. And sometime last year, we had a strong partnership with the Decentralization Secretariat, whereby we conducted some workshops with community radio stations in order to help them on the different ways that they could promote work around decentralization. So I can say
all
our
right.
Questions is okay.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. You're listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. We're speaking to Tarisai Jangara, Program Specialist Communication at Zambian Governance Foundation, and we're discussing interesting issues and the work of ZGF. Those of you who are listening or you've called in, you might be wondering what ZGF is. You've probably completed or filled in a survey which is asking Zambians in living in the diaspora to share information about the philanthropy work or exercises that are involved in. So Tarisai is working for that organization. One more question and then I go to the survey. Your presence on online social media is very strong. It's high. The vulnerable people in rural Zambia don't have access to this information. I notice on your website that you have a publication called Tigwepo Magazine. How is this? Is this an online thing or it's a printed publication?
So the Tigwepo, which means let's participate, is a magazine that we produce quarterly, but we have also ensured that we print hard copies that we then share in different provinces so that everyone can benefit. But also just related to what you have said, our presence online, it's quite heavy and the visibility is quite high for organizations, especially online. But if you notice, we have a separate organization called SAY, Social Accountability and You, which helps people with access to different policies and law. So we upload those freely and anyone can access them. But what we then went ahead to do is we realized that if we are going to be doing this online only, then other people, like especially the ones in the rural areas, were not going to benefit. So we have what we call the SAY Social Accountability into Instacart. So we take them to different provinces. We bring together different duty bearers, communities, and we have a discussion in an informal setup, just discussing the specific policies and just sharing information, because the social accountability and youth platforms, we just want them to enable people to know, claim, and secure their rights.
Okay, so the publication, Tigwepo, it's in different languages, I presume?
At the moment, it's not in different languages. It's just in English. But in future, it's something that we want to do. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Let's talk about the survey that is being circulated, and what was the driving force behind initiating this survey? And tell our listeners the survey we're talking about.
Okay. So we have developed what we call the Diaspora Philanthropy Survey. So the survey emanated from, I think you remember the, I mentioned about the Beyond Giving survey that we carried in Zambia. So we then thought that diasporians are increasingly garnering attention as contributors to the economy and social development in their own countries. And we realized that diasporians have both the desire and capacity to invest in their countries of origin, but there exist several barriers to diaspora capital flows, which include lack of information, widespread legal challenges, and the growing need for financial intermediaries. But these were just our thoughts we were brainstorming. And the immediate questions that I had was, okay, who are the diasporians? Where are they? And what causes are they willing to support? Do they want to channel their resources towards the education sector, the health sector, supporting children with disabilities, etc.? All that is not known. So we just thought as a team that why don't we come up with something consolidated? Let's carry out a survey and get to have an overall understanding of who are the diasporans, where are they, what are they doing, are they supporting any causes in Zambia at the moment? If they are doing it, how are they doing it? Do they have social groups or social movements that they are using, or some of them, they feel the need, the want is there to say, I need to be supporting my country in this way, but there's no connection. Some people, they long to be part or to just know what is going on in their rural area. If someone is coming from Namanongo, where we are currently working on, and we have been there, the plight of that community, they are saying they need a simple hammer meal. And we can be having diasporans who were raised in that same community, and they would want to give that, but there are no proper channels of doing that. Or better still, there's no information at all, absolutely nothing of the different causes that they can support. So we see ourselves, with our philanthropic work, we just see ourselves providing a philanthropic vehicle which can appeal to diasporans and locals. Then we can be able now to link the diasporans with different communities or different causes that they can potentially support. And when we talk about support, people, they quickly think that we're talking about finances. Finance, yes, to those who can, but for us, skills is much more important. People can come back for holidays and they can say they need 1 week where they can be focusing on something. And that's where we can come in as the Zambian Government Foundation to say, back home, your community, this is a list of their priorities, and this is how you think you can intervene. So we are just encouraging all the people in the diaspora to fill in the survey so that we can have information that can help us create linkages back home and overseas.
To what extent, in working with the diaspora, did you engage the Bank of Zambia or Central Statistics Office? Did you share any information or get any information from those two institutions and other related organizations which deal with the diaspora?
At the moment, we have not gotten all that information, but it's something that we do when we are trying to consolidate our survey to see what has been done and what has not been done. But also the issue of information poverty. From a communications perspective, that's one thing that I have seen in Zambia, that the information is there, someone is sitting on it, but it's not shared freely or in an open manner where you can just go maybe on Google on a specific site to just have at least background information that can help. It's not there.
Okay, Zambians and African people are generally very skeptical people in filling out anything that has got to do with them giving their personal information. I don't know the primary method you are using to disseminate this survey and how you have approached that challenge, because I'll be very honest with you, I'm one person who doesn't fill out surveys. The only reason I did it because a friend of mine convinced me that this is coming from a source that they are aware of and it's authentic. So how are you addressing that skepticism?
Firstly, when we're developing that survey, as a communications person, there are already questions that I thought were highly sensitive. So those questions, we had to cut them off so that we had to ensure that people would fill the survey in a free manner. And we made sure that we engaged the trusted people who are already in the diaspora, who know our institution, so to just encourage them to share. And we also made sure that we availed our details, like our website, so that people can at least see that this is an authentic organization. And if they had wanted to get in touch with us, they would do that also. But it's not always easy to get people to fill in a survey. But so far, I can say we have gotten more than 50 responses, which is quite encouraging for me. Though we would want more before we close the survey.
Okay. So when was the survey initiated, and when do you intend? What's the time frame in beginning and end? What time frame have you given it?
So this we first shared this survey on the 15th of June, and we are hoping that by the 30th of July, we'll be closing it up. At least if we have more than 100 responses, for me, that's good enough. That information can surely help for a start.
Okay, 100 responses. All right. So somebody listening for the first time and they are like, even seen or heard about this survey, how do I access it? I want to fill it out.
Oh, okay. So if they're on Twitter, they can follow ZGF at ZGF Zambia. So find the survey. It's clicked at the top. And if they're on Facebook, they can also go on Zambian Governance Foundation page. They'll also find the survey. And if they go on our website, they'll also find the survey under our local philanthropy page.
Okay, so everybody, you heard it. Mm-hmm. It's on Twitter, it's on Facebook, and it's on the Facebook page, okay? Let me allow my colleague before we end here, Miss.
If anyone faces any challenges, they can send us an email, which is available on our website again, and we can send the survey directly to them.
Okay. So those of you that are listening, my colleagues here, Ms. Sombo, Dr. Munsanje, that's the way, everybody, if you have a question, please go ahead. You have a comment for Mr. Rifai? Matilda, anything on the survey?
Hi, Nathan. Good morning. I'm not sure if it's afternoon there. I joined in at not too long ago, but so far the information has been good. Thank you for bringing on our guest. I did, as I said, I missed most of the interview, but in terms of the survey, with the information collected, how are you planning on sharing the results?
Thank you very much for that question. So in our survey, there's the part where we are asking people to provide their contact details so that we can also share the findings of the survey with them. But it's something that we share widely, because already we have different platforms. We have a weekly news flash, which has more than 2,700 subscribers, which we use to share. But most importantly, we are also asking people to specify if they are interested in hearing from us, especially regarding the issues that we are asking in the survey in future. So people, they have an opportunity of engaging, but I would want to further interact with the Zambian Governance Foundation or after this survey, that's it, which is something that we appreciate. So we are going to compile that set of emails, and there's going to be some sort of communication, continued engagement with people who are interested in supporting different philanthropic causes in Zambia.
Okay, great. I did have a follow-up question, Nathan, if it's okay.
Go ahead.
In your experience, I know part of the questions in the survey was to ask on philanthropy from the Zambians in the diaspora. Without waiting for the survey results, what has been the experience? Are you seeing an increase of philanthropic work from the Zambians in the diaspora? And how is it being received on the ground in Zambia? That's my last question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. But I don't think that's a question I'm able to respond clearly, because our concern is an organization. I think it's something that I achieved with Nathan, was around information poverty. But the diasporans are already doing so much, but that has not been shared clearly. There are no platforms for us to find that information. And already within the surveys, I'm already seeing a lot of people saying they've been supporting different causes through different platforms, but all those we didn't know of them. But we're just hoping that through this survey we can produce something which is consolidated and even begin to follow and engage with some of the groups that are already doing that work.
Wow, great. Excellent. Fantastic.
Thank you
for saying that.
So, Tarisai, could you please share the three sources where people can access this survey again?
Okay, so to access our local philanthropic survey for the diasporians, which can only be filled in by people living in the diaspora, you can go on our Twitter page, which is at ZGF Zambia, where you'll find the survey clip to the top. And on Facebook, you'll find it on Zambian Governance Foundation page. That's on Facebook. And also on our website, you'll find it under our local philanthropy grant. And our website is www.agf.org.zn.
Excellent. So everybody listening, those of you that have called in, if you haven't filled out that survey, it's authentic, it's genuine. They are not trying to get any information from you about where to track you down and give it to whatever British, Australian or American government. No, that's not the intention. So we encourage you to go to those three sources. Or those of us that have it, have received it on WhatsApp like I did, please send it to a friend and some friend. Canada is somewhere in UK, please share that. The Knox and George in Australia, we're calling upon you, our colleagues, to do that and share this information. Tarisai, thank you for joining us, and I hope we can do a lot of things together, two organizations.
Thank you so much for having me. We appreciate it as an organization.
Excellent. You are welcome, and we shall be sharing the link to this show. It's always available for those that didn't listen to the live podcast, to listen to the recorded show. Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Tarisai Jangara, Program Specialist Communication at Zambian Governance Foundation, was our guest today, and we do hope that you do go ahead and fill out the survey. Okay, we'll continue our discussion here with one of our colleagues. She's a contributor and a part of this team. She contributed a chapter to a book that has been published, African Diaspora Direct Investment. Sombo Chunda is not a stranger to all of us here. And Sombo, good morning again.
Good morning.
You didn't want to ask Tarisai anything?
No, it's quiet. Yeah, I didn't want to ask any questions because I'm working in the space. I know ZGF for a long time. I did some consultancy work for them in 2009 when they just set up. So
okay.
Yeah, so today it will be a show.
Interesting. Okay,
yeah.
African Diaspora Direct Investment. Interesting title.
Yes.
Tell us about this book.
So this book was written by 12 scholars of African origin and based in many parts of the world. Some are based in Africa and some are based out in the UK and in the US. It was, I think, a close to 2 years project and a very interesting experience for myself. So the idea really of this study, it's a program of studies of entrepreneurship in Africa, and you will realize that there's very little that has been written around diaspora investment in Africa, and for a number of reasons. The first reason could be, people's lack of willingness to give out information around things that they're doing back home. But then in the past, there'd also been issues around policy, you know, because almost everything gets tied to a policy of some sort. But over the years, over the recent past, we've seen a number of countries that are coming to the table now offering dual citizenship to, you know, people that have been out in the diaspora for a long time. And that, in so many ways, is kind of encouraging a lot of discussion around the space. But not only that, we've also noticed that, I mean, a number of reports that we've gotten a hold of now from the World Bank and the OECD, everybody's saying, wait a minute, what have we been doing? There's a lot more money that gets to go to developing countries from the diaspora than the ODA, the Official Development Assistance. So all these things that are really playing out in a particular manner are clearly pointing and showing us that this is a space where we should have probably given a lot more attention and haven't done that in the past. And so in the spirit of trying to, you know, give a broader picture at a global level of what is happening, idea was born to come up with a book, come up with a handbook that can be used in schools, but then also a book that people can read and have a good understanding around what is happening with diaspora investment. So that really is the background, I think, of this book. I know I haven't really done justice in explaining, like, you know, but if you get the
you don't need to give details so that people will be able to look at this book. You've contributed a chapter to this book. What's the title of your chapter and what does it focus on?
Okay, so I wrote a chapter on the survival and sustainability of businesses in Africa, diaspora businesses in Africa, survival and sustainability. So the book is, it doesn't really read like a story, so to say, but it gives a full picture of how things are like. It starts with looking at what motivates people to start businesses, and there's a whole lot of other chapters. So my chapter is what I probably talk about. I kind of give an introduction and a background of, you know, the investments that I estimated of the diaspora, and I did a number of interviews, and I did extensive literature reviews, and I found, you know, survival and sustainability of businesses can be a challenge. So when this project was proposed, the book project was proposed, I thought that it would be very important to have a chapter that would be talking about survival and sustainability, because those are really important. If you start a business at home and it doesn't survive, or if you start a business and you don't have a plan to sustain it, then what are you doing? So it's basically all in the spirit of thinking long term. Yeah, if a business has to survive, if it has to be sustained, there has to be a plan in place that makes it go beyond you know, the 12 months or a reasonable time space. And what is reasonable, I honestly don't know. But the idea really is to think long term. How can we help businesses to be sustained? How can we help businesses to survive? What challenges have they been facing? So that's what I bring out in the chapter that I wrote.
Don't you think part of the greater challenge, problem, issue of survival and sustainability is this thing about the African continent not valuing the importance of research information that has been done or which is there? Because you heard me ask Tarisai about their relationship with Bank of Zambia and CSO. Don't you think that we tend to just look and say, oh, wow, business Yakwama Tuda is doing, Saraola business Yakwama Tuda is doing so well, I guess I better do that too. Don't you think that's where sustainability and survival basically is one of the issues? That
yes, so I will start by talking about research, which you've talked about, and not really placing so much value and importance on that. And I really commend the GF now that they're doing this philanthropic survey that they're doing, because that is important. I think you cannot underestimate the power of research. I think what has gotten countries to be up in space, to set, you know, stations up in space and to do all sorts of amazing things is because of research. And I think that as Africa and as Africans, we have to you know, start thinking differently about research, because if we have to come up with programs, if we have to come up with businesses that we want to, you know, stand the test of time, we have to be able to use information, and we have to be able to, you know, gather information and, you know, interpret it and manipulate it in ways that are going to be able to help us to have projections and to make predictions of what the future is going to be like. So research is very important. And, you know, having that as an anchor for programming, for example, for institutions cannot be under, you know, stated. Again, on research, I know a number of people just think about donor aid, and I'm pretty sure even the time that we were having this discussion when Teresa was speaking, there was probably a lot more people that were thinking, wait a minute, I mean, we get donor funding in the country, and people that are out here also saying, oh, wait a minute, donors give quite a lot of money to the country. I mean, research has shown that the amount of money that ODA, you know, official development assistance, sends out to developing countries is way less than the money that people of origin in those countries actually send. So just as an example, in 2016, the OECD, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, said that, you know, overseas development assistance had reached its peak at 142. In the same year, the World Bank reported that $601 billion was sent to, you know, various countries. And of those, $441 billion would go to developing countries. And we're talking about developing countries largely in Africa and in, you know, in Asia. So if you look at $142 billion being sent as money, official development assistance, you compare that to $601 billion. I mean, the difference is large. So you can clearly see that the diasporans have been doing quite a lot, and over the years, you know, we probably just haven't come up with a way in which we can be able to, you know, fully, you know, have a better understanding of what they have been doing, but then also fully appreciate this kind of contribution that's being done. So I'm just trying to emphasize the value of research and why it is important that we have to do different kinds of research for us to be able to be, you know, making the right decisions and for us to be well informed. But then you also talked about, what's the other thing? You talked about research, and then you talked about, you know, the copycat mentality where Matilda is selling clothing. Yeah, if Matilda is selling clothing, and then I should also start selling clothing. I mean, it all goes back to research. If you do a proper market research, if Matilda is selling her clothing in Dola and in Kitwe, you know, is that a place where I should be selling my clothing as well? And then it's not only clothing that I can be able to get into. I mean, there's the solar, you know, access to electricity, you know, there's the solar space, there's tourism as a potential space that you can invest in. I mean, Zambia has beautiful beaches. And, you know, there's a huge demand for services at home. Taxi systems are not well coordinated, for example. I mean, individuals, if my neighbor starts a taxi business, I start a taxi business. Is there a way in which I can think of coming up with a platform that makes taxi services and taxi businesses to be more responsive to people's needs? I mean, we have Uber here, we have Lyft. How can we be able to work with technology, and how can we be able to work with technology hubs that we have at home, to be able to come up with apps and to come up with products that are going to serve the people? So if you go back to research, you can also look at the many different things that you can be able to do. If Matilda is selling lipstick, if Matilda is selling clothing, I shouldn't be doing the same thing. I can offer a different service to the people. So we need to change also the way we think about what we can do. And we need to be able to be uncomfortable, you know, and get out of the space of, oh, you know, nothing to kanyaka de umbi na lach tofia lech da umbi. We have to be able to have, you know, a space
it's
of
very true.
In the things that we do.
It's very true. I want to bring in my friend here to say something. But you see, when I look at ZGF website, it says something about new thinking, new approaches. You see, you and I have got a new thinking, new approaches. But the government is not interested in that, okay? They want to continue to keep this $601 billion you've talked about, Sombo. They don't want the people. They want to make us appear, the people in the diaspora, that we ran away, we are not interested. I don't know. In the 4 minutes, I've got 4 minutes remaining here. Roger indicated that he wanted to say something. Good morning, my friend, before we transition to open forum.
Yeah, good morning, Nathan, and good to hear Ms. Sombo's voice again. It's been
Hello.
A while.
Yeah. I have to be more on this program.
You need to.
What about daughter? She's been lost.
I'm just happy we're not talking politics. So maybe we can talk about the mayoral elections in Lusaka later.
Well, you know, this is what I've been encouraging my friends on radio. Politics are really consuming most of our time when there is so much we can discuss. I agree with you. But there is no time.
Yeah,
I agree. But good to have you on the show again. It's been a while.
This one, please respond this in 1 minute, Sombo. To what extent does this book address rural issues?
To what extent does the book address rural issues?
Yes.
Okay. So, like I say, the book looks at various aspects.
Or is it just talking about Lusaka? That is his point. His question.
That's really interesting. Okay. So, let me just give I've given a general overview of the book, and I think a little into that.
You have 45 seconds or 1 minute.
Okay, so the book has 12 chapters, and it looks at different parts of Africa. So there is a section that looks at Zambia, and it was authored by Dr. Juliana Swale. Dr. Juliana Swale is a professor in the UK, and I have the privilege of having been taught by her when I just started out years back in my studies. She is a professor for economics. So she gives the perspectives on Zambia, and then there are perspectives on West African countries. So these perspectives are not really specific on a rural area. They're perspectives that give the bigger picture, but yes, taking into consideration what is happening in the rural areas as well. So I would encourage people to read the book. It's for instructive purposes in school. It's a good book, a recommended text for a business or economics professor. But I think it's a very good book that gives a new way of thinking, and that tries to contribute to a space where there really hasn't been much that has been done. Yeah.
New way of thinking, eh? And we shall pick it up in the next segment. Thank you, everybody. That was our show. Join me again next week, 9 a.m. Eastern and 1300 hours GMT. Let's go back for open forum.